It's the Bengal Financial Literacy Show coming up next on KISU FM Radio with our host, Chris Chatwin, professor with the Idaho State University College of Business.
Thank you for joining us for this month's episode of the Bengal Financial Literacy Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Chris Chatwin, coming to you from the KISU studio here at Idaho State University. We are returning back to talk about student loans, give an update on where student loan forgiveness currently sits. This is the month of November, so again, everything could change by the time you're hearing this. These are the updates from where we sit right now. Now, of course, a couple months ago, did this episode introducing student loan forgiveness, and I was here all by myself. That's no fun for anyone listening, just hearing me lecture on as if you were in my classroom. So I had to invite a guest to be with me here this episode. So I welcome back to the podcast, Dave Bagley.
Dave, not Durward, Bagley.
No. Anyone who is a fan, can we say we have fans of the show? I'm not sure. I'm going to assume that somewhere out there is a fan, someone who has heard all the episodes, and they will remember Durward the Second.
Durward. Durward Keith Bagley the Second.
Durward Keith Bagley the Second, known to his friends, co-workers, family, as Dave.
That's right. I'm Dave. I was Davey when I was little, by the way.
Davey.
You can call me Davey.
All right. Well,
my
Davey.
Dad was Dave. Big Dave. I was little Dave.
Or Davey. You know, if we start calling you silly names and we have you here to talk about the law.
Oh, I know. It hurts the credibility, doesn't it?
Maybe.
Or maybe not. You never
maybe
know.
Not. All things, finance, the law, we can make all things exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Even tax procedure.
Even tax procedure.
That's why I only had two students in that class.
Oh.
Because it's so exciting.
So exciting.
It is, actually.
Well, that is an advanced class. So.
All right. Are we going to talk about the law?
Yeah. So what we need to do is we need to talk about the law. Because quick update. All right. So student loan forgiveness, as was, I guess we'll say proposed, because I don't know if we can technically call it passed, but as was proposed and put forth back in August, would say that up to $20,000 of student loan can be forgiven to eligible individuals, so those who qualify. So I'm going to restate the facts. $10,000 if you did not receive Pell Grants, up to $20,000 if you did receive Pell Grants. In order to qualify, if you're an individual tax filer, income has to be less than $125,000. And if you are married filing joint on the tax return, that's going to be $250,000. So that is where student loan forgiveness sits, or what was proposed. Estimated that 43 million people would qualify. And to date, about 26 million people have applied. And of those 26 million, I believe the last estimate I heard was 16 million that were approved. But now that means 16 million people out there that heard they were approved for loan forgiveness are now wondering, is that true? And that's where we need to discuss the law, and that's where we bring in Dave Bagley.
Counselor
Dave Bagley.
Yeah. So as of right now, nope, there's no loan forgiveness for us for now.
For now.
Right. I am one of those who applied. I don't know. I didn't hear anything back.
Okay, so you have applied, you haven't heard anything back.
Correct. So, you have not yet.
Probably because I know, and in my work as a small business consultant, I remember all of the back and forth procedures when there was the PPP that was taking place, and I kind of just sat back and said, you know what, I'm gonna wait on this.
Let the dust settle.
I'm gonna let the dust settle.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to note, you and I discussed this before the show. This is not going to be a political show. We're not discussing the politics of this whole thing.
Right.
And we're just going to discuss the law. And in fact, the court, even the Texas, the United States District Court for the Northern District of Texas, which is the court that essentially enjoined or stopped the process.
Yeah, that was the ultimate. I mean, there's been several lawsuits, right?
Right, there have been a few, yeah. And this is the one that has really stuck. There was actually one that I think some senators brought, and the court found they did not have standing to bring the case. And so we're not going to talk about those. This is the case that really put a stop, at least for now, the loan forgiveness program proposed by President Biden.
This is the case that resulted in now, if you go to studentaid.gov, or if you Google student loan forgiveness application, you're taken to a portal that says, hey, we're not currently taking applications because of some court rulings, but we are fighting this.
Right. And this is in the appeals process, and so we don't have a final answer yet. This is the beginning of a legal battle that will likely last, I would think, probably another year or maybe two. So we'll see. But yeah, what I think would be kind of fun, I think tax procedure is fun too, so.
Well, we're going to have to make it fun.
Okay, we'll try. You can do the fun part. I would like to talk about the facts. Those who are my students who are listening to this, because probably all of them are, right?
They better be. Yeah.
They're probably all listening
to this. No better way to spend your Thanksgiving break.
Oh, I'm sure they all are listening to this. They know what I'm going to say. It's all about FIRAC. Facts, issue, rule, analysis, and the conclusion. So FIRAC. That's how lawyers and judges. Yep, FIRAC. That's what my students, they learn about. When attorneys and judges address questions of justice or the law, this is how we discuss it, basically. It's how lawyers make arguments, and it's how judges write opinions. What are the facts? What's the issue raised by the facts? What are the applicable rules? And then how do you apply those rules to the facts, so the analysis? And then what's the conclusion? So that's what we're going to discuss.
All right.
If it's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's talk first about the facts. And before we even get into the juicy facts, I'm just going to reiterate what court we're in.
Okay.
So
we're going to stick with the main one, right?
We're going to stick with this main case that really put the halt.
Slam the brakes process. On this procedure.
Yeah. So it's the United States District Court for the Northern District of Texas. And so what that means is there's state courts and then there's federal courts. And we're in federal court. We're not in the Texas State Court. We're in federal court located in Texas.
Okay, so federal court, but located in mm-hmm. the Northern District of Texas.
Correct. And there's three levels, basically, three levels of federal court and most state courts too. So there's the district court level, which is what we're going to discuss today. That's typically the court level that determines what the facts are of a certain case. It's called the trial court level or the fact finder. Once that district court or trial court level has made a decision, that decision can be appealed to an appeals court, which is the second level. And this case has been appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And after the appeals court makes a decision, that decision can be appealed, of course, to the United States Supreme Court. And whether or not the U.S. Supreme Court accepts that case or not is completely up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they only accept something like 2% or 3%
of all
cases.
Very small number.
Yeah, it's a tiny number.
If they don't accept the case, I assume it kicks back to the appeals court,
It just stands.
The appeals court decision. Final.
Yeah, the appeals court decision stands if the U.S. Supreme Court does not accept the case. Where we find ourselves with the Texas court is we have this, you know, all legal cases are about problems. So there's a problem, and there's two plaintiffs in this case. I don't think we have to go into their names or their backgrounds or anything necessarily, but the basics, because we don't have a lot of time, if we were going to do like a whole season of this show type of, you know,
if this drags on for a year, this might just become
it could,
the premise
actually,
of the
should,
show.
Right. We should have at least two more shows on this, because we'll have the appeals court decision, and then we'll have it'll probably go to the U.S. Supreme Court as well. And so then we'll have a U.S. Supreme Court decision to discuss. But anyway, okay. So what happened is there's two plaintiffs. One of them had commercial loans, and so she was ineligible for loan forgiveness because of the types of student loans that she had. They were not federal student loans.
They were not federal, and as I pointed out a couple months ago, these must be federal loans. Now, if I remember correctly on hers were originally federal loans that were either consolidated to commercial loans or sold to a commercial lender. One or the other, because I believe the program she was in no longer exists.
So, I'm going to have to rely on you on that one. I actually don't know the answer to that question. So I'm going to rely on you, and it makes me really frustrated. If that's true, that it was a federal loan that was then sold to a commercial loan, that's problematic, right? In all sorts of ways, right?
So I'd have to do some more digging on that.
That's really interesting.
My understanding, the argument was these used to be federal loans. That program no longer exists, so now it's a commercial lender that services them.
Ooh, that's super interesting. So, and I just didn't look at that part of the case, so I should have probably.
But that is also whether they were moved there without her knowledge. Or, which would make sense, like you're saying, frustrating.
Yeah, super interesting.
Or if she simply decided, hey, I'm going to consolidate my loans.
Yeah.
And which is still frustrating, I think.
My understanding of her argument was that, you know, this really is arbitrary that it would only apply to certain types of loans and not others, of which her loans were characterized as. So, her loans didn't qualify, so she was frustrated by that. And then the other plaintiff, he did not have Pell Grants. So you, like you mentioned earlier, you get $10,000 for the loans, and then if you had Pell Grants, you could get up to another $10,000 worth of loan forgiveness.
Yeah, and that's if you took a Pell Grant while going to school.
Right.
Which I think is interesting, because if the argument is we're trying to help lower income, what if right now you're lower income, maybe you didn't qualify for a Pell Grant because your parents made too much money.
Correct.
But now, certainly, you have a much bigger economic need.
Right, so and that's his that was his situation. This plaintiff's situation was he did not qualify for Pell Grant because of his parents' circumstances. So it wasn't his; it had nothing really to do with him.
Yeah, at the time.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah, but now he needs it.
At the time of the filing lawsuit, he was not in a high income tax bracket.
So he qualifies for the student loan forgiveness, but because of that, you didn't receive a Pell Grant while in school.
So you'll only get up to the
$10,000 instead of up to
correct.
20.
Okay. And so those
are interesting. Those are great arguments. I think.
Yeah. And again, we're not getting into the political. This is not for you and I. This is not a political issue. This is only a discussion of what is the law.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, I think they have legitimate arguments. The court certainly thought they had legitimate arguments. They made, from a legal standpoint, that was kind of the background, the basis from which they came. That's the story, not story in a negative sense, but just that's the background. But the legal arguments that they made revolved around two different things. One was that there was not the proper notice and opportunity to make comments to this new law, that they were not given the opportunity to make comments, essentially.
Okay.
So that was one argument. And the other argument was that essentially, just to break it down to be as simple as possible, basically the argument was that the executive branch, the Department of Education, did not have the legal authority, the constitutional authority to pass this law.
Gotcha.
So it's really a question of separation of powers. And as we recall, of course, from our study of the Constitution, there's three branches of government: legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. And they each have, they're supposed to have kind of specific
separation
obligations.
Duties, right? Separation of power?
Checks
and balances.
Exactly.
Which we always hear, right?
Exactly. We're supposed to have checks and balances. And the court goes into that in its discussion of the case. So generally, as we recall, the legislative branch's primary responsibility is to make law. The executive branch enforces the law, and the judicial branch interprets the law in real general terms.
Okay.
Now, something that's important from a background standpoint is to recognize that Congress, the legislature, can delegate the authority to make law and to make rules. And they do that all the time, and they've done that for probably ever since I don't know if right after the Constitution was ratified, if Congress immediately started doing that, but for years and years and years and years, it's been well accepted that the legislature can delegate the authority to make and create laws to the executive branch.
Okay.
And that's, in fact, what underlies this case, is Congress's delegation to the executive branch under an act called the HEROES Act. It is the Higher Education Relief Opportunities for Students Act of 2003, and that spells
HEROES.
Yep. So that was 2003. Now, this related to the wars that, that followed 2001.
Right.
And essentially, the purpose of the HEROES Act was to help those who were in the military with student loan and other loan issues. And it gave the executive branch the ability to waive and forego certain things to help military personnel and other people as well, not just military personnel, but other people who basically were affected by war or other national emergencies.
That's the key there. National emergencies.
Exactly.
Right? That's the argument that's being made, the pandemic.
Right, exactly. So, interestingly enough, the Trump administration had considered taking executive action to forgive student loans. Under President Trump, the Department of Education determined that they didn't have the legal authority to do that. Now, here comes a little statement that it's one of those statements that probably at the time made a lot of sense and maybe At the time that President Trump was looking into forgiving student debt, Nancy Pelosi said, people think that the President of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone, he can delay, but he does not have that power. That has to be accomplished through an act of Congress.
Interesting.
Yeah. And probably accurate, at least in the court's view, certainly accurate, because the court's going to tell us in this case that the Secretary of Education, the Department of Education, does not have the authority, in fact, to
do this. Not the first time a politician has made a statement that will later come back to haunt them.
right, exactly. Under President Biden, the Department of Education, according to the judge, this is their language, said the Department of Education changed its tune and concluded that the HEROES Act does allow the executive branch to create a loan forgiveness program. Remember, when we go back to what the plaintiffs were alleging or arguing, they were arguing two things. Again, one was that the proper procedure wasn't followed, that they didn't have notice and they didn't have the ability to comment on the change to the law, that we were going to forgive debt, which is a law.
Is that meaning that Congress didn't have that notice, or
that the American people didn't have the notice? Yeah.
Okay.
And so under the under procedural law, right? So there's substantive law and then there's procedural law. Just, are you following the right steps?
Gotcha.
And this harkens back, honestly, to the Constitution and to our rights to due process, right? That due process is essentially the idea that the government can't take away our stuff, whether it's our freedom or our property, without giving us the opportunity to respond and to speak in our own defense.
Okay.
The judge, to cut to the chase, the judge says, you know what, because the Secretary of Education promulgated this loan forgiveness program under the HEROES Act, there was not a requirement to provide notice and an opportunity to comment, because the HEROES Act doesn't require that. Yeah. And so the judge pretty summarily just said, you know, that doesn't really apply. But their second argument, the Secretary of Education, that argument is the Secretary of Education does not have the power to enact this broad-ranging student loan forgiveness program. That argument resonated with the court. The court analyzed the HEROES Act, and what they were looking for primarily, without getting into all the detail, they were primarily looking to see, did Congress's grant of authority under the HEROES Act cover this type of situation? Does it give the executive branch Did the HEROES Act give the executive branch the authority to take this kind of broad-ranging, gigantic step of forgiving $400 billion of student debt? And what the court decided is that when you're dealing with, and there's certain laws that they relied on, there's a case called Chevron that most of these types of issues are reviewed under, we don't have time to get into all that detail, but basically, the court said that when you're looking at something this big, $400 billion of loan forgiveness, that's sweeping and gigantic.
Right, that's huge.
Yeah, it's under the court's analysis, the HEROES Act did not grant the authority to the executive branch to take that big a step. Can the executive branch take certain steps with regard to student loans? Yes, absolutely. If there's a national emergency, if there's war, absolutely, no question that the Department of Education can take those steps, can take certain steps with regard to loans. But this is such a big, gigantic change that the court felt like Congress had not that the authority granted by Congress in order to do something that big would have to be very explicit. It'd have to be very clear that that's really what Congress intended.
Right.
And the court just said it's not clear to us that the HEROES Act actually granted that type of authority. So we're going to stop the program. The Secretary of Education the Department of Education just did not have the authority to make this law, so it's unconstitutional. That's basically what happened.
So that's the district court, the mm-hmm. lowest of the federal.
Correct.
Says, can't do this. So then, of course, it's now
been appealed.
Appealed.
To the Fifth Circuit. And I don't know when they will hear the case and make a decision. After they make a decision,
either party could appeal it.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court could then hear it.
Correct. And that'll be really interesting to see if the U.S. Supreme Court agrees to hear
this
appeal.
Case.
Yeah, if they don't. So here's one of the issues. One of the issues is that oftentimes the U.S. Supreme Court will hear cases if there's different rulings in different circuits. So there's the Fifth Circuit, you know, Idaho, we're in the Ninth Circuit. And so if the Fifth Circuit makes this decision, let's say that the Fifth Circuit says, yeah, we agree with the district court and this is an unconstitutional use of power. If the Ninth Circuit has a similar case and says, no, it's not an unconstitutional. The Supreme Court would likely weigh in and say, well, we have two different circuits who are weighing on an issue that affects everybody across the United, well, not everybody, but in some way it probably affects everybody. But it really is an issue for the whole United States. The U.S. Supreme Court would likely step in and say, yeah, we're going to hear the case.
All right, so mid-November right now, student loan repayments are supposed to begin January 1st. Mm-hmm. Is there any way this is resolved before then?
Okay. I doubt it. I'd bet you a dollar that it's not resolved by then.
But I'd have to disagree with you in order to take that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I think I'm on your side of things.
Yeah, I suspect we're at least a year out, maybe more, to really having this finally decided.
So what will be interesting to see, because they have told us that this is the absolute last time that student loan repayments are going to be on pause, that be prepared, we are not extending again. That's what will be interesting to see. Will borrowers have to resume payments January 1st? Because now so many, for 2+ years now, have not been making payments and have not seen interest accruing or their loan balance growing over that time. So this will be interesting to see, and obviously something that anyone who has upcoming payments needs to focus in on.
Right, absolutely. It could end up being, to some people, a shock. It could be a big... big change to their monthly expenses.
And things have not calmed down. I mean, maybe we can say they've calmed a little. Prices are rising. Wages aren't keeping up with it.
We're likely entering a recession or have already entered a recession.
Yeah, depending on your measurement. So.
But things are still pretty good. I mean, in many, it depends on your...
Not arguing things aren't good, but that is a shock for anyone. Even if it's a $100 payment. You think two years you've been not making that payment, and as soon as you have to make that. And for others, it's going to be more, 200, 300, 400.
Yeah, it can absolutely be a shock. It can be really, really, really stressful and concerning. I'm a huge proponent of stoicism. And one of these stoic principles is that the obstacle is the way. That you always try to find the positive in a situation and figure out how you can turn it to your benefit somehow. And one of the ways... there's a lot of ways to do that, but one way to do that is to look and see just whether, there's a lot of people throughout the world who are really, really struggling, and I think we have great opportunities here in the United States. It is, absolutely, I agree with you. We need to individually, I agree with you 100%. It could be a big shock. We need to prepare for it, for having these payments come up, but look, glass is half full. It's either half full or half empty, maybe both, but it can help say it's half full. Deluding ourselves can be good, right?
Sure. But, everything circles back, and I think I hammer this a lot on the show, but it does kind of, it's like you said, we are in great shape, relatively speaking. Now, that doesn't mean that things can't be better. We can be in better shape individually if we are making more conscious decisions, putting more thought into how are we managing our finances, what are the decisions we make when it comes to taking out debt. What are the repercussions? And that doesn't just mean student loans. That means using my credit card, which many are using to just pay the bills right now. And understanding the aftermath, not just worrying about the right now, but worrying about the year from now, the 2 years from now, the 5 years from now. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, avoid credit card debt if at all possible. Yeah, if you have to live on credit cards, that's rough.
That's what
hard.
We should
that's
end
a difficult
on.
Situation.
Yeah. Avoid credit card debt. Yeah. If at all possible.
Yeah. We didn't even mention Star Wars, so we won't.
So we're going to have another episode where we're going to see where things are at. So,
thanks for letting me be here, Chris. I appreciate
it. Dave, always appreciate you being on the show. Again, studentaid.gov is the best website for the best resources on what's currently happening and where things are at in the loan forgiveness or potential loan forgiveness process. Thank you for joining us, and wish you a wonderful holiday season.
The Bengal Financial Literacy Show, hosted by ISU's Chris Chatwin, can be heard on the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. here on KISU. You can also hear this or all past episodes of the program at kisu.org/programs.